Hello again, my friend. I'm glad you came walking with me today. There's a narrow stretch of land I want to show you, small enough to cross on foot, stubborn enough to stop empires. Let's stand here together for a moment and listen to what the earth remembers. I remember the sound before I remember the sight. Trumpets, bright and sharp, cutting the morning air, incense curling upward, a crowd pressed tight along the rocky spine of the land, waiting to see if the earth itself would obey. I was there when Nero lifted the golden pickaxe. It gleamed absurdly in the sun, polished, ceremonial, not the tool of a laborer, but of a man who wanted the moment to be remembered. Priests murmured their blessings. Someone shouted his name. Someone else held their breath. Then, strike. Metal met stone. Not a crack, not a crumble, just a dull, stubborn thud that traveled up his arms and into the watching crowd. The land did not flinch. Nero struck again and again, each blow announced with ceremony as if sound alone could convince the rock to part. Dust rose. A shallow scar appeared, enough to say, "We have begun." I looked past the emperor, past the banners and the anxious smiles, and down toward the water on both sides of the isthmus. Two seas, so close they could almost hear each other. Ships waiting, sailors knowing the long, deadly journey they'd still have to make around the southern tip of Greece. This place, this narrow strip you could walk across before lunch, had mocked humans for centuries. They had dreamed of cutting it open. They had measured it. They had argued about it in councils and workshops and taverns. And now Rome had come, confident and loud, convinced that willpower could replace patience. As the crowd cheered, I felt that familiar tightening in my chest. Not dread, not hope, recognition. Because I have seen this before, dear one. The moment when ambition steps forward and announces itself to the world, certain that history is about to change, while the earth waits, silent, keeping its own counsel. Once the cheers faded, I like to step backward in time, just a little, so you can see how old this idea really was. Long before Rome arrived with trumpets and gold, the Greeks stood here squinting at the same stretch of land. The same problem, two seas separated by a stubborn ridge of stone. Sailors knew it well. Merchants cursed it. Families prayed over it. They imagined a channel where ships could pass safely instead of risking the violent winds far to the south. Some sketched designs, some made measurements, some even began to cut. One Corinthian ruler, clever, cautious, decided not to dig at all. He built a road instead. Stone grooves laid carefully across the land, just wide enough for ships to be hauled over on wheeled platforms. A workaround. Practical. Ingenious. Incomplete. I watched crews sweat and strain as hulls creaked across dry ground, dragged by ropes and muscle. It worked, after a fashion, but every ship still felt the insult of it. "We are meant for water," they seemed to say. The Greeks understood the dream. They simply knew their limits. Then came Rome. Rome did not like limits. By the time Nero stood here, this narrow neck of land had become a challenge passed down through generations, a question waiting for someone bold or reckless enough to answer it properly. Nero saw more than geography. He saw a legacy. A canal here would save lives. It would speed trade. It would bind the empire tighter together. But it would also carry his name forward in stone and water long after the applause stopped. I remember thinking, as he surveyed the ground, that he was standing on layers of unfinished thought. Greek calculations, abandoned trenches, quiet wisdom left behind like tools set down for later hands. This wasn't a new idea at all. It was an old one, resurfacing again. And that, dear one, is where the real story begins. Not with invention, but with inheritance. With a man convinced that power could finally do what patience had not yet allowed. Before we go on, dear one, let me thank a sponsor who believes not every problem needs a dramatic hole carved through the earth. Today's episode is supported by Diolco's Ship Transfer Services, the trusted name in overland ship hauling, proudly operating across the Isthmus of Corinth since long before emperors arrived with golden pickaxes. Why risk treacherous seas, unpredictable winds, and angry capes when your entire ship can be gently rolled across solid ground? At Diolco's, skilled crews, stone-grooved roads, and an impressive amount of human muscle work together to get your vessel from one side to the other. No canal required. Is it glamorous? No. Is it fast? Not especially. Does it work? Consistently. For generations. Diolco's understands something ambition often forgets. When the tools for a grand solution don't exist yet, a reliable workaround is not failure. It's wisdom. So if you're transporting cargo, triremes, or the occasional overconfident merchant captain, choose the method that respects both gravity and reality. Diolco's Ship Transfer Services. Why dig the future when you can roll toward it? One careful step at a time. Service availability limited to approximately 2,000 years ago. No refunds for crushed hulls, strained backs, or bruised imperial pride. When the digging truly began, the spectacle fell away, and the human cost stepped forward. This was no longer about a shining pickaxe or cheering crowds. It was about bodies, backs bent under the sun, hands blistered raw against stone that did not want to move. I watched thousands of workers arrive at the Isthmus, enslaved people, prisoners, soldiers reassigned to labor, engineers with careful eyes and worried expressions. They brought tools, ropes, wedges, measurements scratched into wax tablets, and hope, some of it honest, some of it forced. For Nero, the stakes were immense. If this canal succeeded, it would prove that Rome could tame not just peoples and cities, but geography itself. The empire would flow faster. Grain, marble, wine, soldiers. All of it moving more safely, more efficiently. A shortcut through the world. But for the people swinging the tools, the stakes were simpler and harsher. Could they survive the work? The rock here is unforgiving. Hard limestone layered with fractures that collapse without warning. Dig too steep and the walls give way. Dig too shallow and you make no progress at all. Every cut required judgment. Every mistake carried consequences. I remember the sound of stone cracking at the wrong angle. The sudden shouts, the scramble. Dust thick in the air as the trench partially collapsed, swallowing hours of labor in seconds. Men pulled free, others not. And then there were the fears you don't find in engineering manuals. The Greeks had warned about this place. Old stories whispered that cutting the land might anger the gods, that the seas would rush together violently, that the balance of the world could be disturbed. Even Romans, so confident in their power, carried those whispers with them into the trench. I saw workers pause before a new cut, tracing protective symbols in the dust. I saw priests consulted again and again, not just for ceremony, but reassurance. Nero pushed forward anyway. That too mattered. He visited the site, he asked questions, he urged speed. Sometimes he spoke of destiny, sometimes of practicality, but always, always of completion. He wanted to live to see water flow where stone had stood. Yet even an emperor cannot outrun time. The project strained resources, it demanded constant attention, and far away the empire itself was beginning to creak. Rebellions, unrest, the slow friction of ruling too much, too fast. I could feel the tension in the air, not just in the trench, but in the idea itself. This canal was trying to be born into a world that wasn't quite ready for it. And that is the quiet truth of so many human efforts, dear one. The idea can be right, the need can be real, the will can be fierce. But timing matters. As the trench lengthened, impressively, undeniably, I felt the same ache I've felt in many ages. Admiration tangled with unease. Because I knew that what they were cutting into the earth was not just rock. They were cutting into the future, hoping it would open on command. When I look back on that trench, half cut and slowly filling with dust, I don't see failure the way people usually mean it. I see a pattern. I've watched humans return to the same questions again and again, sometimes with better tools, sometimes with louder voices, sometimes with deeper patience. This place was one of those questions, not can it be done? But what kind of world does it take to do it well? Nero believed the answer was power, enough authority. enough labor, enough urgency. And for a while, it almost worked. The trench grew. The idea took shape in the open air. People could stand at the edge and imagine water moving through it. That matters more than you might think. Because once something has been imagined clearly enough, once it's been measured, argued over, partially built, it doesn't disappear when the work stops. It lingers. It settles into memory, into records, into the quiet knowledge that this is possible, just not yet. I've seen empires try to force permanence. They carve names into stone. They raise monuments. They rush, afraid of being forgotten. But the things that last, the things that truly reshape human life, often move at a different pace. This canal was not ready for an emperor's timeline. It needed shared knowledge, better tools, stronger institutions, a world that could sustain a project longer than one ruler's attention span or lifetime. Nero could command men. He could not command continuity, and so the work slowed, then stopped. The trench remained a scar, a promise, a lesson waiting patiently in the earth. I remember standing there long after the crowds were gone, running my fingers along the cut stone. I felt no disappointment, only a quiet recognition. Human progress does not move in straight lines. It loops. It pauses. It leaves markers behind so future generations don't have to start from nothing. That unfinished cut was one of those markers. A reminder that ambition alone is loud, but learning is cumulative. And that sometimes the most important part of an effort is not its completion, but what it teaches the next hands that come along. I held that thought gently, dear one, because I knew, though I would not say it aloud just yet, that the land was not done with this idea. Not even close. So let me leave you here with me for a moment, standing at the edge of that silent trench. The tools are gone now. The voices have faded. Wind moves through the cut where water was meant to flow. If you didn't know the story, you might mistake it for abandonment, for arrogance punished, for a mistake best forgotten. But I don't see it that way. I see a question left open on purpose. Because every age inherits unfinished work. Not just canals or roads or buildings, but ideas, systems, hopes that arrived early and had to wait. You live among them even now. Plans paused, reforms half-built, promises outlined but not yet kept. It can feel frustrating, even discouraging, as if effort was wasted. But listen to me, dear one. Nothing that teaches us how the world resists is wasted. Nothing that clarifies what patience, cooperation, or timing truly require is lost. The earth remembers these attempts. So do people, even when they don't realize they're remembering. That trench told future builders where the rock was strongest, where it collapsed, how deep was dangerous. How much time would be needed, not for one ruler, but for a society willing to commit across generations. So when you encounter something unfinished in your own life or world, I want you to pause before dismissing it as failure. Ask instead, what knowledge is being stored here? Who might this be waiting for? Progress does not always announce itself with trumpets. Sometimes it whispers, not yet. But soon. And when I return next time, I'll take you to another moment, another place, where humans carried old lessons forward, not with force, but with memory. Until then, my friend, walk gently. The ground beneath you is wiser than it looks. Much love. I am Harmonia. Oh, one more thing before we go. I have a small favor to ask. If you enjoyed our time together, if this story stirred something in you, please take a moment to give History's Arrow a 5-star rating. It helps others find their way to these echoes of the past. And if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next step on our journey through time. Better yet, share this episode with a friend, a fellow traveler, someone who still believes that history matters. And if you're curious about my family, yes, the loud, glorious, divine mess that is the Olympic gods, I tell those stories too in another podcast called The Olympic Family. It's full of love, drama, and plenty of thunderbolts. You can find it wherever you listen to your podcasts. Until next time, keep your heart open to the past and your eyes on the arrow. This podcast sails out to you from Red Buoy Media, LLC. The stories we share are licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, non-commercial, share-alike 4.0 international. That means you can pass them along, remix them, and even argue with them. Just give us credit, don't try to sell them, and share responsibly. Thanks for listening, friend. Until our next adventure.